You are listening to Your Pod and Your Staff, the podcast of College Life Christian Fellowship at UC Davis. I am Peter Nittler, the college pastor of First Baptist Church in Davis, California, and our mission is to shape college-age people from all spiritual starting points into complete and equipped agents of King Jesus. And on this podcast, we want to have conversations that will accompany our Tuesday night Zoom gatherings, and we hope that they form you, encourage you, maybe even make you laugh, and that they would be a source of King Jesus guiding you through this time. All right, people, what should I say about this episode? Well, let's start here. The decade mark since I've been in college is rapidly approaching, and it's dawning on me that I am in the season of life that I obsess over when I think about the current students of college life. And you've heard me obsess about this before, and I've said, you know, I want to do college ministry in a way that makes these 4 years the best of your life while also setting you up to have the next decade be even better. And well, my cohort, my group of college lifers who went to school with me, we've lived that next decade, or at least most of it. So it makes sense to start asking, how are we doing? What is that next decade like? What's our faith like? What's been challenging? What's made life wonderful? What has formed us? Has it been any better than the college years? So I brought in two of my buddies from my college years, John and Nathan, and they agreed to come on the show and open up about their last decade and slalom through my many questions and follow-up questions to give us at least two test cases of life after college and life after college life. And I want to say this, okay, this is a conversation among friends. And so we, or maybe just me, say some hard things, ask some kind of hard questions. And I honestly have no real sense of how this conversation is going to strike you. I have no real sense of how I will strike you in this episode. There might be some of you who'd rather have Nathan hosting this podcast, but I hope that the conversation is thought-provoking, I hope it's challenging, I hope it's intriguing, and I hope even though we barely scratch the surface of all we could talk about in terms of the next decade, that it primes the pump for you to start to think about who you want to become. And I do hope that the honesty and the friendly wrestling together is in some way refreshing to hear. It really is great to have friends with whom you can push and pull like we do here. I hope you find some of those friends in the next decade. Enjoy the podcast. All right, we're back. It's Your Pod and Your Staff. And today it's going to be the Peter Nittler Social Hour. I invited two of my good friends from college. Maybe you've heard their names, maybe you haven't. I'm going to tell you in a little bit how, if you've been a faithful listener to the pod, maybe you'll have known them by association. But I have with me today some college life legends of the past, Nathan Ely and John Bailey. What's up, my dudes?
Yeah, what's up, guys? It's good
How's it going?
Okay, let me tell you what voices you're hearing. Okay, I'm going to say hi to Nathan. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, how's it going, Pete? It's good to see you, buddy.
How you doing? Yeah, good to see you. And I'm going to talk to John. John, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Pete?
I'm doing well. Okay, so a little bit of background info. Nathan, John, and I were kind of all roommates, but kind of not. I think I actually took your spot, Nathan, didn't
I? That's right, yeah. Uh-huh.
So we actually never were roommates. And then John, you and I, we were sort of roommates. We lived in adjacent apartments. Would you like to be the one to tell what we called the adjacent apartments?
I can be, but also I want to out you as the first time we didn't actually meet was when I was supposed to drive you to freshman retreat. And I believe you said you couldn't come because you were sick or something, but come to find out later, you were going to a Warriors game, which
oh my gosh.
In 2010 was, I mean, that was an interesting sacrifice, I would say.
Yeah, it was a Warriors-Wizards game, a meaningless basketball game. The Warriors actually came back down 20 and won the game. Did they go to the playoffs? No, they didn't go to the playoffs. They weren't any good. But yeah, do you remember me saying I was sick? Because I remember telling that story, and I tell myself that I'm not as much of a liar because all I did was say I was gonna go and then backed out. But then if my excuse involves me being sick, that's like Repentanceville.
Yeah, no, I don't actually remember. I think I may have been embellishing on that one a little bit.
That story lives on because I told Katie before we were friends even that I was gonna go on freshman retreat. And so we always say that our first interaction was a lie.
Oh,
but you
gosh.
Were gonna drive both of us. You were slotted to drive Katie and myself to freshman retreat.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And that's when the romance should have started.
Mm. Oh,
but
man.
It didn't.
So can you tell us what were our apartment names?
Oh yeah, our apartment names were the Cheeks, left cheek and right cheek, because they shared one stairwell going up, and then one went left, right, and one went right.
And you were a right cheeker. I was a left cheeker.
Yeah.
Or I guess Nathan and I were.
Yeah,
left
I was in the left cheek. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna tell really fast. There's lots to say about both of you guys and why I'm excited to have you on, but you both have sort of featured in my, I guess, public words.
Okay.
And here's what I mean. So there was a sermon that I preached a couple years ago, and in this sermon, I told a story about how I went to a wedding in Pasadena and got everything ready. We got our flights, got a rental car, got a hotel, got everything ready to go, and then we show up and look for our seats at the venue.
Oh, gosh.
To go where we're supposed to sit down. And it turns out that I had never RSVP'd to the wedding.
Right. That's right.
and that wedding was for Nathan Ely.
That's right.
And tell me your thoughts on me just barging into your wedding and crashing it.
You know, it's hilarious because Caroline and I, like the guest list was like the hardest part. And like the table assignments, it's like a puzzle piece. You're like putting all these puzzle pieces together. And it was funny because when you guys showed up, we had to split up two couples that were friends of mine. And so they had to sit apart from their spouses, which is really funny. And they were super nice about it. But I remember when I saw you guys, I was like, hey, it's been so long. And then you're like, we crashed your wedding. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I felt so bad. I was like, I told Kay, I was like, should we just leave? Like, do we
no,
leave?
No. I'm glad you guys stayed. It ended up working out, but it was pretty funny.
You still have the cartoon picture that
that's great.
Drawn at your wedding.
That's awesome.
And then, okay, so to tell you about how John features in this, if you remember, I don't know if you should or would, but I think last year at this time? It might have been last year at this time. We were talking about Stanford and I were doing a podcast on work. Mm-hmm. And it might have been in relation to, you know, what you're doing after college or whatever. And I was trying to come up with an example of work that seems so distant from kingdom work. And I started to, the tip of my tongue answer was someone who's just sort of like, you know, making doors and windows. And the reason that became my answer was because I know that that's what John does. And so you had some words for me for that kind of behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was cool that was like the most boring job you could think of, or like the least relevant to the kingdom was, you know, exactly what I did. But I didn't know. I thought you just picked something out of thin air or your subconscious, but I didn't know it was targeted at me.
Wow. We're discovering a lot about each other today, you and me, John. Well, it's really great to have you guys. It's pretty fun to have this conversation on podcast form.
Yeah.
It's fun when the three of us or any of our brigade from back in the day, any of the cheekers get together to talk. And so it's nice that a podcast gives us the excuse to do it.
Totally.
So I hope we laugh, and I know that you guys have tons of wisdom to share. So let me sort of set the table. So we're calling this episode The Next Decade.
Mm.
And to kind of lay the groundwork for what I'm hoping for and why we're doing this kind of thing, you know, I notice when I'm talking to college lifers, I start to say a lot of the same stuff. And I think I notice this is the stuff I believe and really hope for. And one of them is that I hope to do college ministry in a way, we hope to do college ministry in a way that sort of, something we say a lot is that we want these 4 years to be the sort of the best of your life so far. Mm. But we want to do it in a way that is going to make the next decade even better. And we don't want to sort of ignore the fact that we want to prepare you and get you ready for a lifetime of faithfulness. And some things that we have in our sights for that is we want people to learn to love the local church. We want people to know and love the scriptures. And we want people to have the chance to make the best friends of their life. And it feels like all of that is sort of like, we want this to be as fun as possible, this college experience, but we want the next decade to be even better.
Oh.
And to sort of to do it in such a way that it helps you sort of become that. And I don't know if it's been exactly a decade. I guess we graduated in 2013, right, John?
Yes.
So for us, it's not quite a full decade. But Nathan, you've been out for...
Yeah, that's right. 10 years. Out. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, 2011 so was when I graduated, yeah.
So it's been a decade-ish, and I kind of wanted to check in, sort of like, how is it? What's it like the next decade out? What happens to our faith? What's happening to our relationship with the church? And all those things... Not to give a normative experience for our listeners to be like, oh, this is exactly what I should be expecting, but just to talk to two people about how it's gone, and two people who were leaving college, I'm sure, with an intent on following Jesus and love their time in college, you know, in college life. I I'm hoping. I wasn't leading it then, so I guess it doesn't matter. You can take that up with Dan. And the reason I wanted to have you two on is, you know, we as a little friend group have are Marco Poloing quite a bit.
Right.
And we've had some really, really, really good conversations. And I just think you guys both have a lot to say. It seems like you are pretty content to think about your life and to think about cultural movements and to explore it. And so I just thought it'd be great podcast fodder. So what do you think? Did I set it up well enough?
Yeah. That's great. You set the table.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a chance, I prepared quite a few questions, but there's a chance we get to like one or two of them. I don't know how much you guys will have to say. I don't know how much meat is on the bone for each one of these things, but this is just all the stuff that I'm interested in and all the stuff that I think could be really helpful for our students to think through. And I think connected to a little bit of like, man, this is what I really hope for them. And sometimes I have some fear of like what's really waiting out there for our students. And me being in ministry, I don't quite exactly know what life is like working a secular job or not having to go to church for your job, but like having to choose to do it, that kind of stuff. And so I really wanted your insight. And I'm just going on and on. So it's time for me to ask you a question. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it. Finally,
okay. So I really want to know, just sort of open-endedly, like what has happened to your faith since you left college? And I'm not so much asking you to tell us just what your life with God is like right now, but I kind of want you to, as best you can, trace what happened to you, sort of like, what was it like when you left college, and then what has been the ups and the downs, and sort of what has been your journey through with faith through this decade? And I guess, Nate, want to go first?
Yeah.
Bring us into your life.
No, that's great. That's a really great question. I remember when I graduated from college, I had such a good experience at college life with making friends and community and all that. It was hard to leave, but it definitely felt like, you know, it's time for me to move on to the next phase, you know? And my story is just kind of in a nutshell. I was an engineering major. I was a biochemical engineering major. I got halfway through, got burned out, really didn't know what to do next. So I thought about being a teacher, but then I felt the call to go into ministry. And so I decided I wanted to go to seminary. Dan, who was the former College Life leader, went to Fuller, and a lot of the great pastors, then he went to Fuller. So I was like, oh, I think I want to go to Fuller and get an MDiv and then have that be my career.
Yeah.
And so I switched my major to music, loved it, was the worship leader at College Life for a long time.
Fabulous worship leader.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Fantastic. One of the greatest.
Man, it was so fun. I had such a good time with that. Loved working with Dan, and like the team was great. And so I left. I went to Fuller in Pasadena. I got my MDiv. It took me about 3 years. But while I was doing the MDiv, I was also volunteering at a church and helping out. And it's this huge church called Reality LA. So there's like 5,000 people. It's massive.
Yeah.
So I led a community group there for a few years, helped out with worship a little bit. And then long story short, I helped them with their gospel care ministry. So they started a counseling ministry from scratch, basically. So they hired a licensed therapist and I helped her build this ministry. And through that, I felt like, oh man, I really love counseling. I love that part of ministry. I love sitting with people, help people process things. And so my friend who's a therapist, she kind of like planted a seed of like, hey, you should consider becoming a therapist, or at least like doing that in some form, you know?
Yeah.
So I just kind of tucked that away. And then meanwhile, in my community group, my wife and I met, and we were friends for a while. We dated for 2 years, and then we got engaged, and engaged for 6 months, got married. And then I worked at a church for a couple of years as a worship leader. And overall, it was a good experience. It was tough. It was challenging in a lot of ways. But through some of the difficulties that we experienced, you know, being married and working in ministry, I decided, you know what? I think I want to pivot and become a therapist and like work outside of the church, like still volunteer and help out at the church, but not let my career be dependent on ministry, you know? So I went back to Fuller, got the MFT. I love that experience. Had such a great time. And then I've been working as a therapist ever since for the past 4 years.
Yeah.
And I love it. Honestly, it's been really, really great. Before COVID hit, we were going to a church together. Now I just watch services online. But I feel like faith-wise, I mean, this is a very short summary, but basically, if I could summarize it, I would say over a long period of time, I've learned how to love myself more and love other people more. And I think that's kind of the main thing for me is, that's a litmus test for faith or for politics or ideas or whatever, is if it's helping me love myself more and love other people more, then I think that's a good sign. But if it's doing the opposite of that, then I need to evaluate that, think about that. You know, why is it? Is it making me hate myself? Is it making me hate other people? And then I need to kind of analyze that and think about it. So that's something that I learned from my time at Fuller and my work in the church, my work outside the church. But it's been a great experience, honestly. I feel like I've been in a really good place, and the quarantine's been tough. Obviously, the pandemic's been hard, but
yeah,
I feel like it's made me stronger in a lot of ways, made me more grateful for the small things in life. And I think the most valuable treasures I have in life are my relationships.
Sure. Man, that's so, it's interesting. I mean, obviously I know this about your story, but going sort of in and out of church, experiencing different churches too. I mean, did you go to FBC or UCC when you were here?
I went to UCC at first, then I did FBC while I was at College Life. Then I went back to UCC at the end.
Okay. Yeah. I see. So which are like medium sized churches,
right?
You know, and the reality is big yeah. church. And then the church you were worship leading at, if I remember, was a pretty small
church. It's pretty small, yeah.
Pretty small and pretty old.
Right,
I guess sort of what I'm after, and John, feel free to react to Nate's story too, but like what I'm after is sort of knowing almost like what has happened to your affection for your faith. And I don't necessarily even want to say like what's happened to your affection for God, even though that's part of the answer.
Yeah.
But like how big a role is your faith playing? Like do you feel like you have a stronger faith now? Do you feel like you have a weaker faith now? And again, I don't exactly know how I'm distinguishing that from like just like theology or orthodoxy,
right.
But if that's part of it, feel free to talk about it. But like, just in terms of even like your self-conception, like, do you feel like you are, do you feel like since your time in college and through going through different churches, maybe even some disillusionment in churches, do you feel like your affection for your faith, which I feel like could encompass a lot, like God could encompass, the church, capital T, capital C. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. I feel like there's definitely been highs and lows at different points. In terms of where I'm at right now, I definitely feel like I do pray a lot, and I do consider faith important in just that, you know, especially during COVID, it's like, you know, when there's so much chaos and instability, what do you hold on to? Like, what are the things that you can have in your life to make yourself feel stable or connected in some way, right? And even though there's been peaks and valleys regarding that, like I still feel like I have an affection for my faith and that it's important to me. And it's important to me that, you know, I have someone other than myself to talk to walk with me through things. And that's kind of how I see God, is like this relationship and this person that is always with you no matter what. And even if you feel alone or isolated or disconnected, there's still someone there suffering with you. There's someone there rejoicing with you. And it can be hard to believe that sometimes. I definitely have had, you know, intense moments of doubt and just like, man, I don't know what's going on. And my faith has definitely gone through so many different evolutions, but it kind of reminds me of when they asked John Wesley, you know, who he created the Methodist movement. They said, have you converted to Christ? And he said, I have, but I've gone on a series of conversions ever since. And that's kind of how I think about it. It's like, I'm in process. It's like, I'm open to, you know, what's going on right now. I'm open to the future, but I still feel like I have a connection with faith and that it's important to me that I have someone outside of myself to kind of help me work through things and talk through things and think about things. Does that kind of answer part of the question of what you're asking?
Yeah. I'm trying to discern in my own thinking of like what I think what I really like, if I were to think, what's the motivation behind this kind of question? Like my motivation behind this kind of question is that one thing I just deeply desire for our students is that they're like still Christians.
Oh, right.
You know?
Right.
And I just feel like I feel like it's hard life.
Right.
It's not only is it hard to be faithful, but I just feel like my world is full of people who are stopping being Christians.
Right.
You know? And if they feel frustrated with the church, they feel discouraged by like political, like the church and politics, if they feel they're just going through deconstruction of doctrines that they used to believe, you know?
Yeah.
And so I kind of, maybe what I'm actually asking is like, how much do you feel like you're still a Christian?
Oh yeah.
You know, after 10 years, like, do you feel like you are? I don't know. I want to get John involved in this conversation. So
yeah.
Maybe we can put a pin in your story for a second.
Yeah, for sure. Nate, oh, definitely,
and see if there's any overlap or ways that your stories interact. But
yeah,
maybe,
that's great.
Maybe John, could you take a stab at, are you still a Christian after 10 years?
I'll throw a dart and see where it hits. So I think for me, not having ever been in a vocational ministry, I guess some of my journey and stuff kind of parallels a work journey and employment journey. And so I think right after I graduated was in, I think, the end of 2013. Mm-hmm. Had to stay an extra quarter. But
there's no shame in that, John.
I went on a job search, which lasted longer than I would have liked as well. And so I think it ended up being about eight or nine months of not having a job. And so I think that was a hard time, but I think it was an important time because things sort of like shrunk inward a lot in my life. You know, there wasn't a whole lot going on. I was still in Davis, so a lot of the friends that I'd made in college were still around. So I think that was helpful. But just in terms of working really hard on job applications and things like that, but not seeing any fruit from that, I was probably pretty stubborn during that time in terms of like communing with God in general. And so I think that was, I see that as like a very hard time. And then the first job I got was in Southern California.
Oh yeah.
And I moved down there for like a year and a half. And yeah. And that was hard too, for a couple reasons. The boss I was working for, the guy who owned the company that I was working at, was, I mean, he was just really terrible. he had a lot of tyrant Gosh. Qualities. So I learned a decent amount from there, but I ended up actually just like having to quit, sort of just in the middle of it. And I remember having kind of a moment where I was in his office and he was on a phone call with one of our suppliers and he was just like berating the guy. I mean, it was a contract manufacturer from China. And so he was just yelling at this guy, just laying into him. And I just remember in that moment, I was just like, I can't work here anymore. I can't work here. And so I really felt like that was the Holy Spirit telling me that to quit my job. And I did, even though every person I asked was like, you know, it's easier to find a job when you got a job.
Right.
And so people kept telling me that, which was unhelpful at
the time.
Do you
think that everyone told you that as if that was the first time you had heard it?
Right.
Yeah. It's also easier to make money when you have a job too, but that was, you know. So I think those two experiences kind of back to back, I felt like I had a lot of time to myself and just kind of like inward looking and at the same time kind of consuming a lot of Christian media kind of from all over the place, I guess, theologically. And I was seeing a lot of things that were common between a lot of these things and a lot of things that were not common. And I felt like I was able to kind of like distill down a lot of important things about who God is and things like that. And I think since I moved back up to Woodland in 2017, and I think since then, I don't know if this is correct, but I've sort of adopted the technique of basically just taking the person of Jesus and the work of Jesus as like a first principle, and then just kind of going through life, reasoning things out from there and testing them against scripture. And it's kind of been really freeing. I don't feel like I'm beholden to a bunch of theological points or things like that. And it feels like things then don't disappoint me with people in the church or, you know, people with having character issues and things like that. I felt like it's been freeing to, I guess, just not expect a ton from the church other than attempting to be faithful, I guess. And so it kind of helps me to see things with a little more grace. And I think because of that, I would say, yeah, I'm still a Christian, still trying to figure it out and changing a good amount. But I feel like I have some good first principles to go from.
Yeah. So it sounds like to me, both of you were describing like your faith is a little bit different than it was in college. And Nathan, I feel like there's still some, I already used this phrase, but I'll use it again, but meat on the bone for like what exactly that means. But John, at the very least, it sounds like what you're describing, it sounds like through intaking media from all over the place. And that's, are you talking like podcasts and talking sermons and?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess when media was a little too narrow, but like, you know, being with my wife and going to different churches, I feel like things in terms of like Christian universe expanded a lot first after sort of drawing inward to myself afterwards. Like before college, I didn't even know what a charismatic church was or, you know, or any of that.
Right.
So I think that's been helpful, but it took a little bit of a hard period beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems like there was this insight that you had of sort of putting like Jesus as a first thing. And do you want to just really quickly, if you have a working definition of first thing, second thing?
Oh yeah, that's good.
No, this is embarrassing because I vividly remember it as a Stanford talk, but
or just your like when you say that Jesus is the first thing, like what do you mean?
Yeah, I would mean that like I based on my relationship with him, that I choose to believe that that Jesus is God and that the Bible description of him is authoritative. Mm-hmm. And then so I take that as like a foundational mm-hmm. and then maybe a couple other foundationals, but then anything else, you know, has a little bit of an open
yeah,
hand.
Yeah.
Like those would be like, I guess, right. second
I
things.
See. Yeah. So it's like the second things I might have an opinion on, but certainly glad to disagree and certainly glad to have some diversity mm-hmm. of opinion and thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And seeing people with high character and thriving spiritual lives, believing different mm. things and things like that helped with that.
That's interesting. I wonder how much of that kind of thing is a necessary component to a maturing faith. Because on one hand, someone could read that as like, well, you're just getting more quote unquote open. And so you're getting mm-hmm. less orthodox, right?
Right.
Someone could maybe make that argument, you know, but it's also like, but now you're describing, now you're not as fragile potentially, you know, is that, mm-hmm. would that be accurate at all to say? And what I mean by fragile is both like, maybe if you start to be more convinced of another argument on a second thing, maybe like something like women in ministry, if you start to be convinced of the opposite version of what you might have thought before, now it's your whole faith doesn't have to crumble based on that. So you're less fragile in that way. And also you might be less fragile in that you don't have to be offended by someone else's other opinion because it's not, they're not attacking your faith, the foundations, mm-hmm. you know, you've sort of settled that with Jesus is the foundation. You know, it's not women in ministry. And I wonder, as I'm talking to you guys, I think what I'm trying to discern and put my finger on is like, what kind of like posture is a posture that will help someone be sort of a lifelong Christian? Mm. And if they want that, of course. Right. So yeah, I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think the way I was thinking about it is basically just the mathematical model in my head was multiplying sort of like the importance of an issue in as a percentage, multiplying that by my certainty on it, right? Yeah. So mm-hmm. if I'm like 100% certain multiplied by 0% importance, that's still kind of a zero,
right.
you know? So like why would I, you know, make a stand about it?
Right.
So I guess in that way it's less certainty, but also I've been wrong about plenty of things, so less certainty sometimes seems
yeah.
good.
Right.
Yeah. Nathan, how would you say your faith, how would you describe how your faith has changed? Like you said, you went through these like little mm-hmm. conversions.
Right.
Can you just like either maybe take us through, sketch it out for us, or maybe take us deep into one or give us the whole overview?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can definitely resonate with a lot of what John was sharing too, kind of similar things of like, what are the most important issues to me when it comes to scripture or Jesus or God? Or I think the important thing is like how you interpret the Bible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I went to Fuller. I love Fuller a lot because you get both sides. Like you get very conservative people, you get very liberal people, you get people in the middle, and everyone's there to kind of figure it out and talk about it. And I think that really helped me going into that environment, kind of knowing I have some things I'm convicted about, but I think the most important thing is just being open. And for me, like if I close myself off from other people or other ideas, then I feel like that's not healthy for me. And I get stubborn or I get disconnected from other people or judgmental or harsh. I feel like that's just not a good space for me to be in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I'll say how I describe my faith now. I think, yeah, definitely for sure. I think I would still say I'm a Christian. I'm a very open-minded Christian, still believe in the Bible, still believe in Jesus. But there's a lot of things that I've gone on the journey of change, which I will say a lot of it had to do with my relationships with people at Fuller, with my wife, with my friends, my family. My relationships have definitely affected how I believe. And I could share one thing, like women in ministry, like you brought that up earlier, going into Fuller and then working at a church, which was Reality LA, they don't let women be pastors. Mm. For a while, I was kind of like, well, you know what? I have friends at Fuller who are women who want to be pastors and they're getting ordained in like different denominations.
Yeah.
So my attitude was kind of like, well, you know what? They can go be pastors in those churches. I'll still serve at this church. But then I felt really conflicted about it because I saw some of these women that were so gifted and I led retreats with some of them. I saw them preach. I saw them just do amazing things that I kind of got to the point where I was like, you know what? Like, I think this is pretty important for me personally. And I know there are people that have all sorts of feelings about it, but I got to a point eventually where it's like, you know, I don't really want to serve or volunteer or be a part of a church unless they allow for women to be pastors, because I feel like it's just my personal belief about it has changed to the point of where I feel so convicted.
Yeah.
And my wife was a huge influence on that too. Like she felt very you know, for a long time, she, you know, went to reality and was okay with that. But over time, she was kind of like, you know, even though she doesn't want to be a pastor, she felt bothered by that in a different way that, you know, she hadn't before.
Yeah.
And so I think that definitely affected me in that one particular issue. But that's just an example of just different things I've been through where I felt like my faith has evolved and changed based on, you know, the people that I love and the relationships I have. And I also think too, the experiences I've had too, of like experiencing things and going through that.
Right.
And then that changes it from being a theology on the page to something that you're living out in real life.
Right. What would you say to somebody who said, it sounds like what you went from was caring about the theology on the page to just caring about the experiences you're having?
Right.
Like in the way you told that story, there wasn't a sense of like, well, my theology was changing based on what I was learning and reading, and it was combined with these stories. But it sounds like what you were saying is like, these stories changed my theology. And so what would you say to somebody who is like, that just means you're not convicted. That just means you're, you're, you know what I mean? Like,
Right.
What would you say to that?
No, I can understand that. Because I mean, the way I define conviction is things that I feel passionate about, things that I feel very strongly about. And my convictions have changed over time too, because I definitely, you know, can see how someone can argue like, oh, well, you can be convicted about this now, but then in the future that could change. Mm-hmm. I'm totally open to that. I think what it boils down to me is kind of like what I was talking about earlier is if it helps me love myself more and love other people more, that's what I want to pursue.
Right.
And that's the most important thing for me, I think, when it comes to scripture and theology, politics, relationships, like all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the lens that I see the world in. And I think it's like kind of when they ask Jesus like a bunch of questions about the law and the prophets and all that, he summarized it by saying, you know, love God and love other people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you, you know, can't love other people, you can't love yourself and you can't love God.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I actually had this conversation on Marco Polo, but sort of if your framework and your structure for sort of guiding your, it seems like sort of philosophy of life and then maybe ethics is like, does this help me love myself and love others? It almost sounds like what Jesus said, but Jesus said like love God and love others, you know?
Right.
And so it's like, what happens if in loving myself, I diminish my commitment to the scriptures or Jesus? Like it does is this sort of like love myself and love others, is that a lens, intentional lens I'm going to put on scripture to filter things so that really what I'm going to do is I'm going to love others, I'm going to love myself, and if there's scripture that happens to help in that, and if there's like part of the Christian life that happens to help in that, I'll adopt it. If there's stuff part of the Christian life that makes me feel at this given time that I wouldn't be able to do that very well, then I just won't do that.
Right.
What do you think about that? What would you say to someone who, who told you that?
No, that's good. Cause there's a lot of stuff in scripture that, you know, we've been debating for a long, long time. Like, what does this mean? How do we live this out?
Right.
You know, we have the Protestant Bible, there's the Catholic Bible, the Orthodox Bible that have like whole like bonus books in there, you know?
Yeah.
And it was cool because I got to read. Yeah, two for one. Yeah. But I read like stuff from the Apocrypha too, which is really wild. Like, you know, there's some stuff in there that's interesting. But all that to say, like, I feel like there are certain things that I used to adopt as part of the Christian life that I don't do anymore. And then there are new things that have been added onto that. So all that to say, I don't know if I have like all the answers to that question, because
it's big.
I think it's like it's a big one. I think it's a lifelong process that I'm still figuring out.
Yeah.
But that's like the main thing is like, you know, if I'm loving myself and loving other people, then that's how I see, you know, loving God. And that's, I guess, part of how I would define loving God is loving myself and loving other people, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it does kind of make sense. I think what I'm trying to get at is your, not necessarily if it's right or if it's wrong, but if your conception of how you are sort of interacting with God now is sort of that you will submit to the scriptures. And I sound like a 80-year-old, like, mean person. I don't know what it is, but like submit to the scriptures if and when it sort of what you might want or what you might think seems to butt up against the scriptures. And or if you feel like, not that. If you feel like there's sort of a primary lens through which the scriptures will have to be filtered through that for it to sort of matter to you. So does that make any sense? Did that, John, tell me if that made sense.
The first part made sense.
The first part made sense.
I have a non sequitur, if that's helpful as a break.
Go for it.
I just want to make the point that, like, usually people think of less certainty on some certain issues as being like a more liberal trait. But I think that I would just encourage people that, like, it doesn't have to be in any particular theological camp, but that most people would probably do well to sort of declutter their theological cupboard, I guess, would be the analogy.
Yeah.
So maybe hold on less tightly to some things. For example, I don't think that in heaven there's going to be any real talk of Calvinism versus Arminianism. I don't think the subject is going to come up one time, but maybe I'm wrong about that too. But yeah. So I don't know if that's helpful to anybody. But.
No, I think that kind of thing is super helpful. It's interesting. It's like, I wonder if it's almost just inevitable right now in our day and age that as we mature in faith, people get less dogmatic.
Right.
Do you think that's true? Certainly it seems like some people get more dogmatic.
Yeah. It depends on the person. I think where I'm at, maybe this kind of helps answer some of the questions, is like, you know, when it comes to theology and stuff like that, if it's more conservative, in my mind, it's like the boundaries are a lot more narrower.
Yeah.
It's like a fence that's like a little bit smaller, but if it's more open or liberal, it's like the boundaries are still there, but it's like there's more space from what's considered, you know, good or bad theology or heretical or not heretical or whatever. So I think that's where I'm at, is just the boundaries have opened up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I used to think, like, you know, what's the one thing that God wants me to do with my life? What's the dot on the whiteboard that I'm looking for?
Yeah.
I see God's will and God's plan is the whiteboard. Like, it's this whole canvas that you can paint a lot of stuff within that and still experience life to the fullest in, you know, grace, peace, you know, all the fruits of the Spirit. And that's just kind of how I see that at this point in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe I will just try to, like, introduce some new language to the conversation. But in college life, we talk a lot about formation and talk about, well, one of the fundamental ideas is that you're being formed into something. Mm. It's one of the fundamental ideas just because I care a lot about it. And one of the sort of the tenets is that we are formed not by what we think, but we're formed by what we love. Meaning that it's that which our heart wants that we will become more like. And and you can imagine that that often includes sort of the social group that is attached to too. So you tend to, like, we are being formed by something and someone, and maybe it's a group of people. And I do think, like, in college, when you're in college life, it's like people like love college life. Like, they love the often, like, just the idea of being like a college lifer, you know, and there's something just like exciting about Stanford, you know, and there's just something like that's compelling about that. And it's like people, it's not just that they think he's smart, but there's part of them that's like, oh, I kind of want to be like that when I'm that age, you know, I kind of want to be that person. And so you sort of become formed in that image. Mm-hmm. And so I guess one of my questions and one of my fears is that after college life, after college ministry, now like the specific ministries. So like, you know, if you have been in the church, it's like you're in children's ministry, it's like sort of catered to form you as a child in the church, and then youth ministry sort of catered to form you as a, you know, teen in the church, and then college ministry, it's catered to form you as a college student, and then you're just in the church, and there's no one, it feels like the specific formation is sort of over for you, potentially. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a fear that I have. And so one of my questions, I guess, is like, what do you feel like has formed you in the last decade? And I can try to be a little more clear if it would be helpful, but I'll just ask the question and see where we go. John, what do you think? What do you think has formed you?
I think obviously this is going to be kind of a no brainer, but like, I think the biggest thing that's formed me is like my relationship with my wife.
Yeah.
And like, and I think that everyone should pick a partner, wife, husband, that they actively would want to be more like, because you will be more like them.
And yeah.
You will think more like them. And so I think that relationship has been the biggest thing that's formed me. And then I think like a lot of learning about thinking, just learning about how people think and what people believe has sort of formed me, either what I do, how I do want to think and act and how I don't. And it's, that sort of formed me a lot too.
Yeah. So like can you get more specific? Like what types of, even like ideas have formed you or people have formed you other than your wife? And I'm thinking both holistically, kind of like you're saying of like just for your whole life, but also has formed you in your faith. Like what has, what are the influences that have made you this version of John as a Christian? And I guess, again, I think a hidden assumption is that, like, right now in college life, like, we're putting in a lot of effort to form people. You know, it's like if people are just, like, going through college life, they're going to be formed in a certain direction, you know, because we're sort of taking that seriously. But then, like, what happens after? Where do you get formed?
Right.
That's my question, I think.
I think, that's interesting because a lot of the friendships and stuff that I have at work have formed me in like a social way. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the media you consume forms you in sort of like a social way or like a non-faith way. But then those things have a big impact on how you think and how you relate to God. And so I think the faith formation, I think, changes less coming out of college. But then the way that you're formed by the people around you changes more. I think there you get a more larger breadth of ages, of circumstances, of personalities. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's right, but that's my sense, is that the formation changes more in like a social relational context than the church context for me.
Yeah. And I guess as I'm thinking about it, it's like, doesn't have to be a hidden thing. You know, it's like maybe your church has formed you, like formed the way you see Jesus, formed the way you do faith. You know, maybe I know you meet with Zach and Landon and your families every week. And it's like, has that maybe that practice has formed the way that you see community and the way, you know, like the forces that have like, shaped you into the kind of person you are now. So what about Nate? What about, do you have any sense of what has formed you and made you sort of into the person? And you've already mentioned that like a lot of your friends and your stories have shaped who you've become.
Yeah.
Any other sense?
Definitely. I think the primary influence is my cat, actually. I'm just kidding. my cat has formed me in some ways. But I think I definitely can relate to John, though. I think my relationship with my wife, we've been together for 8 years. Mm-hmm. I'm almost married for 5 and together for 8. So I think my relationship with her has really affected me in so many good ways. And I've learned a lot about myself. I think I've grown a lot, been challenged. And especially during quarantine, like we spent so much time together too. I feel like overall, even though it's been tough, it's brought us closer together in a lot of ways. And it's been interesting, kind of like John was talking about, like the social aspects. Definitely my friends, the people that I've spent a lot of time with, they're friends that I met at church, they're friends I've met through work. I think the closest friends I have are the ones I met through church. And, you know, during quarantine, we weren't able to hang out as much. We did a lot of like Zoom and video calls, and my friend Mark and I do a trivia night every Monday night. Right. And first it was just him and me, just the two of us. And then we, you know, invited a few friends.
let's just camp on the idea that you guys would just do a two-person trivia night where you were coming up with the questions too. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, we got the questions from Professor Andy, who's one of the English professors at Davis. He used to do the De Vere's trivia pub quiz.
Yeah.
So he published a book. And so we'd go through it, and then we invited people.
You know, De Vere's is dead, by the way.
I know, it's so
is
sad.
It really? Yeah,
I'm so sad to hear that. Yeah, so I think community, friends, you know, my wife, family, things I've read, definitely for sure.
Like what?
I just read a book really recently that I really liked by Richard Rohr.
The Universal Christ.
Yeah, I really liked that book a lot. I heard him on a podcast. And then I read the book and really enjoyed it. Went through it really slowly. It took me a long time to get through. Yeah, different stuff like that. A lot of therapy books I've read that have helped me in my work have influenced me. My relationship with my clients, definitely. The people that I work with and the things I've helped them process and work through has affected me, informed me in different ways.
Yeah.
Because then it's not just like an idea or a diagnosis. It's a person who's struggling with issues that I have a lot of empathy and compassion for. Mm. And also, yeah, like podcasts, media, I'm sure, you know, for better or for worse, those things.
Yeah, probably, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
This particular podcast could be forming people in all sorts of different directions.
Yeah.
Okay, let me even ask this question more pointedly. How much do you think the scriptures have continued to form you and or the church?
Oh, yeah.
And my tendency is to try to explain my question to the point of oblivion, and so let me see if that yields anything. How much do you think you've continued, like in the last decade, how much do you think the scriptures and your local church have formed you into the person that you are?
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely say, like, I definitely took breaks from going to church and breaks from reading scripture. Because I used to be like, I'd read the Bible every day, every morning, mm-hmm. you know, I'd be in church every Sunday, but then especially working in ministry, I just kind of wanted a break. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I would visit different churches and kind of, that was kind of fun experiencing different things. But then I just went through a phase where I just decided to take a break and just kind of see what happened. Mm-hmm. And for a little while I had some of the guilt of like, oh, I should be in church. I should be reading the Bible. But I was still reading stuff. I was just reading books about the Bible or reading, you know, just things that were interesting. And it was great. Like, it was good for me to kind of have that release and then realize that, like, you know, I can find God in other places. And for a long time, I was really scared to do that. Or I was afraid of doing that. And then recently, you know, over the past couple of years, I started reading scripture again, started going back to church. But I had like a different perspective where I felt like, you know, I took a break from those things and I was fine. Like, I was okay. And in some ways I went deeper to deeper levels of my faith that I wouldn't have if I hadn't have taken that risk.
Yeah. John, what do you think?
I think for me, the local church, I think the church that we've been going to, has formed me a lot in terms of, specifically the pastor. Cause it's a really small church. I think there's probably like, well, before quarantine, it was probably like 20 to 30 people on a Sunday. And so we got to see a lot of sort of like personal moments with our pastor and just seeing, I'm trying to think of what qualities about him formed me. I think it was he had a lot of vulnerability from the pulpit, and his passion and some of his mannerisms towards the Lord were just really cool. And it felt like it cleared out some elbow room, I guess, for some ways that I could be, and some ways that I could feel about God. And I'm trying to pin it down into words, but I feel like his example of being a very unique person, I guess, and just seeing him and his faithfulness to a church that was, you know, honestly struggling oftentimes, and his character in that, I think that also formed me.
Super exciting to hear. And that's the thing that I assume is like that people are going to be formed by the person they want to be like. And you might not want to be like your pastor in every single area, but it's like there's something about that lived faith that is compelling to you and is forming the way you want to do it. And then I think would influence sort of who you will become, you know? So, okay, I want to pose this like conception that I have, maybe this like working definition. And I think it comes a little bit from like in Romans 8, Paul talks about like walking by the Spirit and walking by the flesh. Mm-hmm. And I think some of my thinking comes from that idea, and some of even my line of questioning. And I apologize if it's burrowing sort of too much, but I guess I have the sense like that our lives, we are going to be walking by the Spirit or walking by the flesh. And I really like and I've said this on the podcast before in other areas, but I like the image of walking. I like that symbol because it's slow. It's a slow and steady movement in one direction. And also, like, you can actually cover quite a bit of ground by walking. It's slow, but you can make pretty far. So, you know, a conception that I have is like, if you're sort of with Jesus and then sort of just start taking a few steps in the direction of the flesh, then after a while, if you've gone kind of far, you turn around and now Jesus doesn't look as appealing to you, you know, because he's farther away. He's, you know, you can't see the beauty of the kingdom life anymore. And I guess, okay, this might be too much to bite off in a short little sentence. But what I guess I have the sense that to live as a Christian right now is countercultural. Mm-hmm. Only in the sense of like, you know, if you in like, I don't know, metropolitan areas, like to live faithfully to Jesus Christ is not maybe the natural cultural way right now. Okay. And so it's going to inherently look a little bit different than the prevailing culture. Does that make sense yet so far still? So I think maybe particularly for you, Nathan, it sounds like what you're saying is a lot of what you'd hear from random person in LA just like living a little bit more openly, kind of like having looser convictions.
Right.
So when you say like, oh, I took a break from the scriptures and I was okay and I'm coming in with a new perspective, I think part of me wants to think like, well, is that perspective just like your average old Los Angelesite perspective? Right. Is it just less distinctly Christian, you know? Mm-hmm. And just is that what's happening to you? You're getting less distinctly Christian, you know, and not happening to you as if it's just some force that like you're a victim to, but.
Right. That's a good question. I think it though?
I'm not sure.
I think I understand what you're trying to ask. Yeah. But the way I see it is like, you know, I like to think of it, you know, like that imago Dei, like we're created in the image of God, right? Like everybody has that in them, whether they think that or not. And the way I would define faith or following Jesus or following God is you're becoming more and more like the image that God created you to be. So it's kind of like you're born like a light bulb that's bright and it's got all the shining and everything. But then when it gets, you know, when you start making bad choices or you start harming yourself or hurting other people in different ways, then it's like putting dust or dirt on the light bulb. And so when you have, you know, convictions and you repent and that kind of stuff, it's like cleaning that and becoming more like the original image. So that's how I would say, you know, the different perspective that I have now is trying to be more like the image that God created me to be, knowing that I'm not going to be perfect. I'm always going to, you know, make mistakes and stuff like that. But I just want to try and find ways to be more loving, be more kind, be more open-minded, but still have boundaries, like still have convictions and things that I say, hey, that's wrong. I don't agree with that. Or yes, I do agree with that, and have boundaries that protect myself, protect my family, my wife.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of how I would answer that is that that's how I feel like I'm moving in this journey.
Yeah. How about this statement? What I'm going to say, how about this? Okay. What a, like, so you're saying this is becoming more like the image of God. I would say that some of your story makes me think you're being formed into a, you're being formed into a secular relativist.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Like that's what you're being formed into. You feel more, if almost more like that than, and again, I'm trying to, that's not necessary. I'm just trying to interact with the story, but it feels to me like you're being formed more into becoming a secular relativist than it is like a Christian, which could be totally wrong. I'd love for you to tell me that's not true, you know, but I don't hear necessarily a lot of your, well, anyway, react to that. Maybe it's a very, not very potentially kind thing of me to say, but, but I'm fascinated by this, you know, cause I think that's my impulse when I hear your story is like, gosh, that sounds a lot like a secular relativist.
Right. You know? I get that. I mean, I guess I would say I'm just a lot more of a liberal Christian than I used to be. I used to be more conservative. I mean, I was raised in the church, and the church I was raised in was in Marin County, which is pretty open-minded. And I grew up in the Covenant denomination. I went to Marin Covenant growing up, and they were like theologically pretty conservative, but very open-minded. And let's have dialogue. Let's have conversation. Let's engage with the culture. Let's not like hide from it or become like a fortress of solitude, you know? Yeah. And then my parents are conservative in some ways, but they're very open-minded in other ways too. So I definitely got a lot growing up. And then when I started becoming an adult and thinking for myself, I started kind of leaning more towards being a little bit more open.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it's secular relativism, I think I would probably just define it more as more open-minded Christianity. Because I know there's, like the church I go to is called New Abbey. It's in Pasadena. It's a very open-minded community. It's a lot of people who are raised evangelical that are in that whole deconstruction, reconstruction process. And so that's kind of the space that I've been in and have felt, you know, a little bit more comfortable in, which I never really thought I would be where I'm at now when I was in college. Like if I went back in time and told, you know, the college version of me right before I was about to graduate, like, hey, here's where you're going to be on your journey. I don't think I would have thought like, oh, I didn't really see that necessarily coming, but there are definitely seeds that were planted along the way. But I'm always open because the thing is like, I could be wrong.
Right.
Like but this is just for me right now. This is what's life-giving for me. This is what's nourishing for me. This is what, you know, helps me in my journey and everything. And, you know, we'll see where I'm at 10 years from now, but yeah, but it's good. I love talking about it though. I think it's totally an interesting conversation.
It is. John, tell me your thoughts. You got anything brewing in your mind?
Well, it sounds like Nathan is the opposite of a secular, or not opposite, half opposite of secular relativist, which would be Christian relativist. I don't know. Parochial relativist. Uh-huh. I don't know.
What has your guys' relationship been like with the church? And I think hidden in maybe that is like, I just assume people, well, I guess two things. One, I really want for our college life students like to love the local church. And I feel like my messaging tends to be like, it's probably not going to be easy to do that. The church is probably going to disappoint you. The church, like maybe the preaching's not going to be great. They're going to do something that's going to be annoying to you. But I want you to learn to like really love this local, this institution, you know?
Right.
And so I'm just curious what, you know, a decade out, what's your relationship with the church been like? John, you talk. I've talked with Nathan.
Yeah.
I think the current church we're at, like I said, is pretty small. So I think, I don't know if it's just over time or if I've always felt this way, but I feel like not having as many expectations that you're putting on the church, the local church, is important. I think having a lot of expectations, not only will it kind of set you up for failure, but I think it's probably kind of selfish if it almost feels like you're only viewing the local church as sort of like a consumer good that you're partaking in instead of like the summation of like the relationships and the programs and the mission and the heart of the church. So I think the not having super high expectations and then also like viewing it as a whole and not as like component parts of like, oh, this, you know, generally I like it, but like this, the worship kind of sucks, or the, you know, I don't know, whatever, the facilities aren't great, or I don't like this person. Cause I mean, there's always going to be, you know, a handful of those things wherever you go. And so I think it was either Stanford or Nick, but just the advice of just kind of like throwing yourself in and committing to a local church for however long you're in an area, you know, once you've kind of done your research and looked around at other churches is important because you'll get to know the people and you'll get to have a lot more grace for the stuff you don't like about it, I think.
Do you like going to church? I guess you probably haven't been able to for a while.
Well, we've been open for probably more than most churches, but we're able to be socially distanced for quite a while because of the size. But I think it's waned a little bit recently because there's not a ton of we don't have a ton of community. So I guess I'm breaking the rule and breaking out a compartment of the church. But in terms of like people within, you know, plus or minus 5 years of us and our life stage, so I think that part's been hard, but. In general, I do. I find it an important part of the week, even if it's just to slow down and kind of like sit in worship and hear the word just for an hour and a half, 2 hours or whatever it is.
That's a long sermon.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's a Assemblies of God church, so you know it varies. Yeah.
not as tight a schedule.
No, not since we've gone off of Zoom.
Yeah,
Zoom. It was a tight 1 hour.
So let me ask you another question: how much of your enjoyment of church feels like an active decision to enjoy it, and how much is it because one couldn't possibly not enjoy it? You know what I mean? Like how much is it? This is so darn entertaining that I just can't wait to go. Or how much of it is like, I know this is valuable. How much of it is almost like a big theology of the church, and how much of it is like, it happens to be entertaining.
I think, I don't know what the breakdown would be. Maybe 50-50 somewhere in there. It reminds me, if I feel like it's like the quote or whatever aphorism about working out, that motivation will get you started, but like discipline or commitment will keep you there. Mm-hmm. So like that feels kind of like what it is the like enjoyment or whatever you like, the features you like about it might get you in the door and might keep you coming for a while, but it's going to wane at some point or for some amount of time. And so then that's when the theology of the local church, I think, is important to have in order to keep going when you get disappointed by the church. Because like, I think I've seen a lot of friends and people, they would be able to cite something that a church did that was like rough or was, you know, ungodly. And then that would be like a catalyst for them to just leave the church or to throw out everything they believe about Jesus. And to me, that's never really made sense. But I think that if you don't have the theology of like the church is going to be kind of disappointing some of the time or a good amount of the time.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a trap.
Yeah. Okay. This is going to be interesting. I'm going to try a little crossover here. So Nathan, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to expose my like assumptions about like to see if I can pinpoint how like your mental space and sort of like Christian mental space, is there any part of you or like as you're hearing John talk and talking about maybe like a reality of like maybe the church isn't very exciting. And maybe the church did something that frustrated you, but I'm still going to commit to this, even if I don't really want to. Is there any part of you that sort of balks at that idea and says like, no, what you should do is like maybe take a step back or leave the church because that'll be psychologically healthy for you to do?
Yeah. I mean, I've been in both places. Like I've been in the space where I've just toughed it out and be like, you know, I just need to be faithful. My attitude too, when I've had bad situations in ministry, it was like, I want to try and push things in like a healthy direction while I'm here, even if I'm having a hard time feeling filled or it's like a difficult spiritual space for me to be in or whatever. But on the other hand too, I think at a certain point, I think it's okay to say, hey, maybe I should try out a different church or take a break for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that's totally fine. And that was something that was difficult for me because I always felt like, well, you have to only find God through prayer, scripture, and church. Like those are the three things, like three places where you find God. But I don't want to lock God into that. Like God is so much bigger than those things. I definitely think you can find God there, but that's kind of where I've been is like, you know, I love going on hikes and seeing the beauty of nature, seeing God there, seeing God in my relationships, or even seeing God in rest and like taking a break. Cause I know for me in ministry, I definitely had the savior complex at certain points where it's like, I need to not just pick up my cross and carry it, but pick up everyone else's crosses and like try and like, and then you just get like crushed. But that's the thing is like, I need Jesus just as much as anyone else. And I need help. And I need a space or some people in my life to say, hey, I'm not doing well. I need support or I need help. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I feel.
So, yeah, that's really interesting. So what about you in the, just your relationship with church? I know you said you're going to this new Abbey, and I think that did you start going during quarantine? So you maybe don't even necessarily know what it's like in
I've been going off and on for like the past 3 years. So we went for a little bit in person, and then once quarantine hit, I just started watching the services online. I still haven't been back in person just because I've been enjoying just watching it at home in my sweatpants and my shirt. It's kind of nice. Eventually I'm going to go back in person because I miss the community piece to it. Something that church does, which I really appreciate, is they do discussion during service. So they have two discussion breaks where they ask a question and then you turn to the people around you and you chat. And I love that because like you already have built in conversation with people. Whereas the temptation sometimes is you go to church after the service, you just leave. You don't really talk to the people around you, you know, unless you push yourself to do it or you're more extroverted. So I definitely miss the community aspect of it and making friends and all that. So eventually I want to go back in person.
Yeah. Gosh, it's so interesting because like I do feel on some level, this is going to be a horrible thing to say, but like I feel like I fear the college life students becoming that. Like I want them to want to go to church. Uh-huh. You know, like if I heard that was happening in like Zach Turley, who you don't know, but College Life audience will know, you know, it's like if that was happening in his life in 10 years, I'd be like, oh man, like he's like not all about Jesus, you know? And I don't think that's good. I don't think that's fair, what I'm saying. That's why I'm trying to untangle while you're speaking. Like, are these just my assumptions of what it means to be a Christian that are being challenged in this, you know? Or is there something to like the fact like, no man, like getting out of bed and going to be a part of a local bodied believing church and doing that is crucial to the Jesus life. And to not do that is to miss something non-trivial. So what I said at the beginning was that this was not going to be a search for a normal experience. Totally. You know, we were just going to look at what life is like after in the next decade. But I'm feeling bad right now. I'm feeling like I'm going to text you.
No worries.
I'm sorry that I was mean to you.
No, I totally understand. And what I'm saying too is that I don't want to, you know, tell anyone how to live or what to do. My story.
Sure.
I still love Jesus. I think I love Jesus more in a more authentic way now than I did 10 years ago. And I think just my mind has been opened, especially working in the church and then working outside of the church for a long time. I think that's also helped. So this is just kind of where I'm at. And I still love the church. I love being involved and volunteering, helping out. I can't wait to go back to that. I miss leading worship too. I want to get back into that as well. It's been a long time since I've done that. So definitely looking forward to plugging in a little bit more once things settle down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we have to go.
Oh, yeah, I do. I got to get back to work soon.
we both have to go.
And this has been so fun hanging out with you guys. This has been awesome.
It has been fun. I'm grateful to hear that you've had fun.
Yeah, it's been great.
Usually we end this thing with Quarantine Corner, but because we only have a few minutes, maybe in lieu of that, is there anything you'd like, either of you sort of would like to say sort of in, as a part of this discussion that, you know, in my sometimes not effective podcast hosting leadership didn't get to some of the things we want to talk about. Like, is there something that's like, hey, before, you know, we're having this conversation, I'd love to say this. Is there anything from either of you?
I think I had something you had a question on here about work and sort of as juxtaposed to ministry, sort of like non-ministry work versus ministry work. And I feel like I struggled with that initially when I first started working, that I sort of would think about schedules over a year, 2 years, 3 years, and it was just like, oh, you know, go to work for the week, then you have a 2-day weekend, and then you go back to work. And it really kind of got to me for a while. But I think as I've grown, I feel like I've been able to take joy at work in like the little things and like in designing windows and doors. I feel like I can take a lot of joy in it. And so I think from the outside, the analogy I was thinking of is like, if you look at like sand from like 5 feet up, you know, if you just look down at sand, it's just kind of like, whatever, it's just sand, it's, you know, who cares? Right. But then when you get kind of like into it and like more granular, you see like each little piece of sand is like really cool. And maybe like little piece of glass in different colors and stuff like that. So I feel like I found a lot more joy in work over time. So I would say if people are starting work and they don't feel like they find joy and they find like the larger scale, you know, year or 2 years pretty monotonous, then I would encourage them that it gets better and that there's joy to be found in it too.
That's good. That's a good
great.
Word.
I love that.
That's a good word. I never feel qualified to talk about work really, because it's like mine, my work and my like spiritual life are so intertwined that it's like to go to work is to do a spiritual enterprise. I don't know what it'd be like to go to work and have it not be somewhat like about the biggest part of my life, you know? Anyway. I love you guys.
Yeah,
and thanks for taking
the
time to do this. I hope it's helpful for the students.
Yeah.
And I'll be thinking a lot about our conversation. Maybe we'll have to have part two sometime.
Oh, I'd love that. That'd be great.
Maybe I'll add a quarantine corner for the end.
That'd be a blast.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But
yeah.
We'll see you.
Yeah. See you guys. Right, love you guys.
All right, that's it for this week. You know, we didn't get a chance to do Quarantine Corner, so here's a quick one. You know, we branched out, Katie and me, and we started watching Toy Story instead of Cars after Mason's nap, and it is hilarious. All hail King Tom Hanks, okay? But I do hope the friendship came through in this episode. I know I asked Nathan in particular some hard questions and said some hard things, but I wish you could have seen his face while we were talking. It was full of grace, full of joy, totally down for my probing, and I'm so grateful for that. And I'm very grateful for both John and Nathan for their friendship, their love of me, even when I've been a friend who's been tough to get a hold of. And I hope the other thing that came through was just how much I care about your thriving. A couple things before we go. Okay, so first, Nathan mentioned being at a church full of people who are deconstructing their faith. And it sounds like Nathan's doing some deconstruction as well. And if that sounds intriguing to you, or you're sort of wondering about that, or you kind of want to hear more about that kind of thing, or maybe you're like me and you just have some questions about that whole process, why don't you join me in reading this book this summer? I just ordered it. It's called After Doubt: How to Question Your Faith Without Losing It by AJ Swoboda. And I heard AJ talk about the book on a podcast that I'll link in the show notes, but he's noticing this trend of deconstruction. He works with a lot of young Christians and seems to want to chart a path through deconstruction that leads to a healthy and robust reconstruct. And I'm very excited to read the book, and I hope that some of you do too. And the second thing, I wanted Nathan to get a chance to say this, but we ran out of time. But his wife, Caroline, has a podcast of her own. It's called Good Christian Fun. It's a comedy podcast about the weird world of Christian pop culture with way more listeners than our show. And I haven't actually listened to it, but even just knowing Caroline through Nathan's stories, she is a hoot, and it would be great for us to support her. Of course, thank you to Kyle Jung and Josh Paskey. We love our show's music, and thanks to Mike Loretto for editing this podcast. Before we go, College Life, I want you to know that we love you more than the blast that it was to live in the cheeks with guys like Nathan and John. We'll see you next week.